From KUOW, this is The Record. I'm Steve Scher.
I'm Marcy Silman. Seattle's expected to grow by 120,000 people between now and 2035. So how will Seattle accommodate that growth?
That's the key question behind Seattle 2035, the comprehensive plan. It's a blueprint for directing growth. We've been hearing a variety of opinions on what Seattle should do.
Today we turn to longtime low-income housing advocate John Fox. John led the Seattle Displacement Coalition, a group that advocates for low-income housing. Our colleague Ross Reynolds spoke to John in KUOW's Crystal Palace. And before you get too excited, it's just the name of our lunchroom. It overlooks the skyline of Seattle's University District.
Where did you grow up?
I was born in the city of Seattle, born and raised in this area, although I lived in the Edmonds area. I went to school here at the University of Washington, had a home just up the street until a year and a half ago at a co-op apartment.
Off University Way.
My office has been here in the U District, the coalition offices, since 1987. So I'm about as close as one can get to being a longtime resident in this town.
When you were growing up in Seattle, what did you like most about it?
I love Seattle. I probably have taken it for granted in some respects because I've lived here all my life in the area. It's diversity. It's economic and social diversity. Nowhere, particularly here in the U District, without exception, you can go down and see a mix of first-generation shops and restaurants and businesses. The Ave is relatively affordable. I think students and young people help keep it that way. But it's at risk. It's at risk. I'm worried that things that have made this city very livable, and it isn't just our beautiful physical environment, it's this richness, this social and ethnic richness that's really at risk right now. We have a group of elected officials that are intensely committed to adding density, and the proposal for development through 2035 would add some 70,000 households citywide, here housing units. Here in the U District, their aim is to add some 3,900 units. Absent policies to protect the stock of low-income and affordable housing, it is a blueprint for gentrification. Unfortunately, our elected officials have been so intent on promoting growth, runaway growth at all cost, they've left out addressing the impact on low-income people. For example, rents have gone up as a direct result of this growth, wiping out existing stock. We're sixth highest in the country in terms of rate of rent increase at 6% and 7% per year on top of rents that are already well above what the average household can afford. The consequence of failing to mitigate the impact of that growth while promoting it at these accelerated rates spells gentrification, displacement, longer waiting lists for public housing, and most importantly, loss of diversity in neighborhoods like we have here in the U District. It is a remarkably ethnically, racially, income diverse community that's at risk all across our city.
I want to roll back the clock to speak exactly to that. As we look out here, we can see 6- and 7-story apartment buildings and more taller buildings. What used to be there? What kind of person used to be able to afford to live there? And how has that changed?
Still, the bulk of the affordable and the stock of rental housing, and 92% of the people who live in the U District are renters. It's rental housing. It still remains in these older walk-up 2-3-story red brick apartment buildings, older stuff. But imagine, again, this area filled with 300-foot towers. And what it will do to this older, low-income, affordable stock, the U District, its character will be irrevocably altered unless we build in measures to mitigate its impact, to preserve affordable housing, and to require developers to pay their fair share of the cost of growth.
I'm speaking with John Fox of the Seattle Displacement Coalition. Well, even as we speak, the planning is well underway for Seattle 2035, the next comprehensive plan to guide us over the next 25 years. Tell me what specifically you would like to see included in that plan and what impact those measures would have.
First off, they are making assumptions about how much growth through 2035 the city should absorb. They're assuming some 70,000 new households, 100,000 housing units. perhaps we should re-examine those assumptions in the first place.
So take a look at, they say we'll accept 120,000 more people. You don't think we actually need to do that or should do that?
I seriously question, and so do neighborhoods across this city, that it is appropriate for Seattle to absorb almost a third to 40% of the region's office development or of the region's population growth. The new workers live in the suburbs, according to data, and continue to do so and commute longer distances. Perhaps it's more appropriate to locate some of those jobs in the suburbs to take some of the pressure off our affordable housing stock and our neighborhoods generally, our infrastructure.
Yeah. Can the Seattle Comprehensive Plan control that and direct growth away from the city?
The city has been told and planners have decided we're going to absorb 70,000 additional households. Under the existing zoning code, we have capacity for 188,000 households. Why do we need to upzone the U District or other neighborhoods? Neighborhoods that under the existing zoning, there are 20 neighborhoods in Seattle that are now at, under their 2024 growth targets, at 200, 300%. 150% of their 20-year targets.
So you're arguing as we look to the next 25 years, we should realize that there are lots of areas in the city that have not even grown up to the capacity of the last plan before we start taking measures to allow more growth.
That's absolutely correct. What is the point, for example, of upzoning this area with 300-foot towers when we have capacity, 2.5 times the capacity under the existing zoning to accommodate the 3,900 they say this area needs to absorb? Why 300-foot towers when we have more than enough capacity under existing zoning? Require developers to pay developer impact fees, a share of the cost of the infrastructure, to replace low-income housing they remove. Every major, larger city in this region implements and requires developer impact fees, developers to pay for schools, to pay for transportation infrastructure, to pay for parks systems. Seattle does not make use of developer impact fees. Most of the affordable housing that exists in our community is already out there. It's built and it's occupied by low-income and working-class people. And new construction inevitably means very expensive housing. Virtually all of it is. Every time, there are permits pending, and when you add up losses of existing low-income housing to new construction since 2005, 6,500 existing low-income and affordable units, counting those going through permitting, are slated, have been demolished or soon to be demolished. That's our affordable housing stock. New construction just means expensive housing. Because the city council, our elected officials, have not responded to the impacts of growth, we formed a group, a coalition for affordable and livable Seattle, made up of 15 organizations representing every part of the city, over 300 people from every neighborhood in the city, and community leaders are calling for growth controls, calling for a moratorium on permitting in these areas like Ballard, where there's runaway growth. There's a movement out there for change, for accountability, and council members who now have to run for district elections, incumbents, they better start more seriously addressing these issues.
John Fox of the Seattle Displacement Coalition, part of our continuing series on Seattle 2035, the new comprehensive plan being drafted right now. We'll hear more perspectives on the comprehensive plan in the coming weeks on The Record. Also next week, we'll hear 4 methods for finding affordable housing in the Seattle area. This is The Record.